Support comes from Empower Missouri's Food Security Coalition, working to ensure access to adequate nutrition for all Missourians, from public school meals to food programs for seniors. More at empowermissouri.org/foodsecurity.
Daniel Strudowski had a varied career path before he went to St. Louis University Law School, including a very brief stint as a country recording artist. After graduating in 2014, he spent 6 years at various law firms throughout the St. Louis area before branching out on his own so he could run for circuit attorney. The Republican joins me next on Politically Speaking to talk about his philosophy of the office and his chances of winning. We've also extended a Politically Speaking invitation to the Democratic incumbent, Kim Gardner. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
It's a little complicated in Bolivar because there is a Parsons family there.
But we also knew that it was important to make sure that we got to where we needed to go.
You know, if you walk in a room and you're getting ready to make a decision and everybody in the room looks like you, you need to stop.
And right now what happens in the United States Senate is as critical as anywhere else in the country.
I really want the state to succeed.
We want everybody to know that we're all working together.
I just worked hard to try to build my name where I didn't have the money.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me today, as we have been doing for the past, five, 6 months or so when we've recorded this via Zoom, is
Dan Zdrowski. Pleasure to be here.
And Dan is the Republican candidate for circuit attorney. He's running against Kim Gardner in November. And Dan, if I remember correctly from when you were the a nominee to the Board of Freeholders, you have quite the varied background.
Yes, that is correct. So I'm originally from St. Louis City. I've lived here my entire life. As far as work history goes, I started off working in restaurants in the city down Lafayette Square. Then I went off to New Orleans for college on a full tuition scholarship to study voice and philosophy, earning 2 bachelors. While down there, I had a number of jobs. I started a small boarding house for Marines. I worked in antique silver, in restoration and sales. And then I also was a bouncer at a techno nightclub.
And you also recorded a country album, or it was definitely an album. I can't remember if it was country, but it was definitely an album.
Yes. It was quite terrible, though. I don't really share that too much. But yes, you've clearly done your homework. Yes, I did release a country album years ago.
And what led you to make the jump from all of those varied careers that you had into law?
The jobs I had had beforehand really set me up well as far as soft skills goes. Learning the importance of being prepared and being able to give a presentation, learning how to interact with others collaboratively on team projects. I gained some managerial experience as well. And I really thought that it was a good fit for both my academic interests as well as my interpersonal skills. I started off the first 2.5 years after law school working for a small general practice firm downtown, doing primarily personal injury and criminal defense. I gained some good experience there. And then I moved out to a different firm out in the county, St. Charles County to be specific, handling primarily personal injury, a bit of criminal defense, and a bit of family law. And I gained a tremendous amount of trial experience out there. My boss at the time became very, very ill. And because of that, I really had to step up and try a lot of his cases for him. And in those two and a half-ish years that I was out in St. Charles, I gained more trial experience than many attorneys get over 6, 7, 8 years, even if they're actual trial attorneys. I mean, it was one after another after another. And then I moved back into St. Louis County to work for a firm here called Hyatt and Goldberger, doing primarily domestic relations, so divorces, custodies, family law in general. And I liked that a lot, but then back in February, in order to have more time, in part, in order to have more time to work on the campaign, I branched off and started my own firm because I needed the flexibility of being my own boss in order to, you know, run this campaign successfully.
And what led you to jump into the circuit attorney's race to, you know, make the run as a Republican candidate?
Well, I'll be perfectly frank about that. You know, St. Louis is my home. I've lived here my entire life. You know, it's, we've had better times, we've had worse times, but, you know, things were getting better. And then, you know, ever since Kim Gardner took office, I know she's not entirely to blame for this, but she's definitely a contributing factor. You know, I've seen crime just spike up. And, you know, you can complain all you want about, you know, whoever is in office, but I knew that if there wasn't somebody to run on the Republican ticket in the event that Kim did win the primary, I did not want her to run unopposed. I wanted the voters of St. Louis to have an alternative option to her so that she just couldn't walk straight into the office after the primary. And so that was my main motivation. One way or the other, I think she's bad for St. Louis. And I think that I can do a better job. And so instead of, you know, just complaining about her and all of that, I decided to run.
You mentioned that Ms. Gardner is not the only thing contributing to some of the rise in crime that we are seeing. But in your view, where is she the biggest factor?
I think that there's a lot of violent criminals out there that have been emboldened by the sheer lack of prosecutions. Most of my campaign has been on the north side. And, you know, just one parent after another I've spoken with crying because they still have to go live in the same neighborhood as the murderer of their son, murder of their daughter, murder of their nephew or their niece. And it's one thing to for you to be a victim of violent crime or to have a close family member be a victim, but to have to see the perpetrator on a daily basis because they still live in your neighborhood because no charges have been brought, or if they have been brought, it's a catch and release type situation. And so I think that there's a lot of, and it's not just on the north side, it's all over our city, but I think that the overall lack of willingness to follow through on even the most basic of violent crimes is really hurting, is really emboldening our the criminal populace of St. Louis.
So much of how the prosecutor does its job is the cases have to be brought to them. And closure rates, especially for homicides in the city, aren't good. I think the last I checked it, somewhere in like the 20 to 30% range. How do you work with, or what's the role of the prosecutor's office in trying to get more cases to your office to be tried?
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the problem there, because right now, the way the system works is the police, they build their case, they put together their information, they present their case to the circuit attorney's office. And then the circuit attorney does have discretion whether or not to proceed. But as the last time I checked it, and by based upon my math, it was only about 27% of those cases that were being brought to the circuit attorney's office by the police were actually resulting in charges being filed. And, you know, I understand, you know, Kim Gardner's lack of evidence, but there's just been too many cases in which there's been ample evidence, fingerprints, eyewitnesses, confessions, that no charges have been brought. Or if they are brought, they're brought at a very minimalistic level. And so I think that, you know, that is, you know, definitely what you brought up was definitely a consideration, but, you know, you can't say that charges are not, that information isn't being gathered by our police and being presented to the office when only 27% of the cases are actually resulting in charges.
And just to be clear, you are speaking of cases overall, not specifically homicides when you're using that 27%.
Yes, I am. Correct? Yes, okay. That is correct. That does relate to the homicide specific, though, in that what I've seen is that there are a lot of victims out there that are afraid of their accusers. And they're afraid because they're accused, I mean, not accusers, the perpetrators of the against them. They are concerned that they will not receive protection. They're concerned that these people are out. They're concerned that there is, you know, no safety for them for coming forward. And that does not breed an environment that is conducive towards cooperation. I think that, you know, there's no easy solution to that. But having trust in the system that charges will actually be brought and people will be retained after committing violent crime is a start.
How would you describe your philosophy of the prosecutor's office? What should be its role within the criminal justice system?
I do not believe that the prosecutor's office is the mayor. I do not believe that the prosecutor's office is the director of health and human services, and it's definitely not the board of aldermen. Their job is to prosecute crimes and as they are presented to them to the best of their abilities. You know, I think that deferment programs have their place. I think that social outreach has its place, but I do not believe that is the circuit attorney's role to go picking costly national scandals and regional scandals and fights with folks in our community and our government as a whole when those resources are better spent getting back to the core role of the prosecutor's office, which is to prosecute crimes.
What would be your definition of diversion? How do you view diversion as opposed to maybe how your opponent defines diversion?
Well, diversion has its place, and its place is for nonviolent offenses. You know, I personally believe that the war on drugs has disproportionately affected Black and disenfranchised communities all throughout the United States. And I believe that the continued prosecution for minor possession charges, whether it be for marijuana, cocaine, MDMA, I believe that that has disproportionately affected our communities in St. Louis. And I think that that is a right place to start for diversion programs. A diversion program is basically a situation in which you're saying, look, do X, Y, or Z, and this won't go on your record, or we'll figure out some alternative way to get you through this without it having a long-term effect on your career and your life. And so when it comes to diversion programs, I think that, you know, I like Kim Gardner's stance that we're not going to bring charges for marijuana, but I would extend that to all possession charges. We have a years-long backlog of violent crimes, assaults, murders, domestic violence cases. Until we get all of them straightened out, there's really no room in the budget, no room in our resources to go pursuing those cases. So, for example, you know, I would be all in support of offering somebody who gets caught with, let's say, heroin or fentanyl, some sort of a diversion program where if you get clean and provide proof of that, then this doesn't go on your record and you can go on living your life. The same goes for other lesser nonviolent offenses, including some property crimes and code violations. You know, those things are better suited for community service as opposed to facing actual criminal charges.
So where does Ms. Gardner go too far, do you think, in her offering of diversion?
There have been numerous instances of diversion programs being offered for violent offenders, and I think that is unacceptable. It is insulting to their victims and their victims' families, and it is a misuse of resources in the office.
Give me an example of one that you've heard about or you know about where you think, you know, a case that maybe people have heard of where the defendant got diversion that you think it was inappropriate.
Due to privacy concerns, I do not have access to specific names, but there are several instances cited in the Post-Dispatch and other regional newspapers specifically outlining when that had happened.
And so overall, are there programs that you think she is doing well? I know you mentioned the not really charging for low-level drug possession offenses. Are there other things that she has done that you think she actually is serving the community well by having in place that you would continue to keep in place if you're elected?
Well, to answer that, there's two basic answers. First, I do support the use of diversion programs for nonviolent offenses, and that is something that I would continue. Secondly, I do believe that there does need to be scrutiny upon all police reports that are filed in the city of St. Louis. One thing that I do think that she goes too far on, though, is let's take, for example, the case of Robbie Robinson. His son was shot, dumped in a dumpster, and set on fire. The perpetrator confessed, and the police had a very, very solid case against him. This happened almost a year and a half ago, and yet no charges have been brought. Nothing has happened, and he is still out there championing for some justice for his son. The official narrative is that the arresting officer was on Kim Gardner's Brady list because he had some sort of a history that had led her to believe that he may not be trustworthy, or he may have some sort of a bias in the case. However, there was enormous amount of evidence as to who murdered Robbie Robinson's son, set him on fire, dumped him in a dumpster. There already are safeguards in place for instances where you maybe disagree with a police officer's background. Any decent public defender and any decent private defense attorney is in the position where they can expand upon that and elaborate that to both the prosecutor's office and the jury if it gets that far. And I think that having a blanket ban on all cases brought by those officers does a real disservice to the community, especially in instances like this.
Under a Drodowski Circuit Attorney administration, how would Brady officers, Brady cases, et cetera, be handled? Would you have an exclusion list? Would it be on a case-by-case basis with that officer? What would that look like?
As I said before, every office in the United States, well, every office at a city large enough to have a substantially sized circuit attorney's office like St. Louis is going to have their own Brady lists. And I think that if you have just a hard and fast policy that you will not bring charges no matter what the circumstances, you get into some real hairy situations where justice is not carried out for victims and their families. I think that the only fair way to our community is to take it on a case-by-case basis. There absolutely are police officers out there that have some serious baggage. Like, that's a fact. However, just because they might have some baggage doesn't mean that every single thing that they touch is suddenly tainted and unusable. I think that the only way to bring justice to our community is to look at that on a fact-by-fact basis. And if some officers' reports need to be taken with a large grain of salt, so be it. But in the case I was just talking about, there was enough circumstantial evidence outside of the report and outside of the officer's testimony that it didn't need to be just brushed under the rug and dismissed.
And we'll be right back on Politically Speaking.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back with Republican Circuit Attorney candidate Daniel Zdrowski. And Daniel, on another issue of police accountability, there's a lot of talk, especially in the Ferguson Commission report, about bringing in outside investigators to handle officer-involved incidences, whether that's a killing, a shooting, et cetera. What's your view of how those kind of cases should be handled? Should it be someone from outside? Should it be handled by a separate unit in your office? How would you address that?
I think that that's a question for the Board of Aldermen. I think that's a question for the mayor's office as well. I think the role of the circuit attorney's office is to enforce the laws as they are written, and any sort of an outside review board would have to be in my view, the only way for it to be constitutional would be for that to be done by either legislation, either at the municipal level or the state level. And so, like getting back to what I said before, the role of the circuit attorney is to enforce laws as they are written and not to, go try and legislate on their own. So I would have to see the actual proposal and actual law that was proposed by either our Board of Aldermen or the state legislature.
Is that something that you would philosophically advocate for, though, if it was presented as legislation? Would you say, yes, I believe that it should be handled outside philosophically? Or is that something that the circuit attorney's office, police department, et cetera, can handle internally?
As I said before, I think that's a question for the state legislature or the Board of Aldermen. I would have to, and before I could comment on any individual proposal, I would say that I've seen several proposals for outside accountability or increased internal accountability, and both systems both have their problems. There is leeway both with handling internally or through a legislative outside body handling police accountability. There's fruit in both those grounds for there to be a workable and viable solution to increase police accountability in our communities. But I would have to see the individual proposal first.
As we're talking right now, the Missouri legislature is in the midst of, I think it's now about a three-week session, special session on violent crime in the cities. Overall, is the legislature advancing proposals right now that you think can actually help reduce violent crime in the city of St. Louis?
I have mixed feelings about that. As a general rule, I am very opposed to government overreach. I'm opposed to state infringing upon municipal issues. I'm opposed to the federal government infringing upon state issues. And that's my general stance. However, I believe that the city has gotten so bad that any necessary help should be welcomed or at least be open to. That said, I'm very wary of, and I'll give it a specific, I'm very wary of the proposal to bring in outside prosecutors from the state's attorney's office to handle homicides and other violent crimes within the city, because at its core, those are issues that should be dealt with internally, because our prosecutors live in this community, our police live in this community, and this is our mess to be cleaned up. And while I do think that it's gotten so bad that outside help might not be a horrible option, I am very wary of it, because at the end of the day, if you look at every municipality in this country, and if you look at the history of law and order in this country, those really are issues reserved for the states. I mean, reserved for the individual communities in which people reside. And so I'm very wary about it.
And so, to be clear, this is Senator Onder's concurrent jurisdiction proposals. Is it the concept of concurrent jurisdiction that you're wary of, specifically how Senator Onder's is written, just to help people understand what we're talking about specifically here?
Yes, that is what we are talking about here. I am concerned about it. I haven't seen, as things change and things get moved around. I would have to see the final proposal. I do believe that outside help is welcomed at this point, but I am still wary about it, just because any sort of concurrent jurisdiction would inherently, at least from what I've seen, involve there being prosecutions by people that don't necessarily have strong ties to our community. And so we'll have to see how this all plays out. As I said before, devil's in the details, but that's where I'm at.
You also mentioned that you don't necessarily like it when federal prosecutors come in and help get involved with state issues. And St. Louis has Operation Legend. There is Safer Streets, which is where the Attorney General has deputized some people to go help with the U.S. Attorney's Office. What should some of the role of partnerships look like, or outside help look like, in order to sort of best serve the community? What would be your philosophy on stuff like that?
My philosophy is that in general, we shouldn't need that help. We have the resources within our city to handle this internally with people that care about our community and have strong ties to our community. That said, things have gotten so bad that we do need the help right now, at least in the short term. And so with instances like Operation Legend, you know, it's still playing out, but as far as I can see from at this point in time, it seems to be doing a great job. It's helping us clean up some old cold cases. It's helping us make some arrests that normally wouldn't have happened. It is helping for the time being, but I'm hopeful that we will eventually reach a place in our city where it will not be needed anymore.
You talked a lot in the beginning of this podcast about the trial experience that you've had, and that's certainly important to handle and work in an office that does do a lot of trial work. What about the management side of things? You know, the circuit attorney is kind of the leader of the office, isn't necessarily in the courtroom quite as much. Do you have the management experience necessary to, you know, deal with an office of attorneys, side staff, et cetera?
Well, answer that in two ways. First off, I've managed and owned several businesses throughout my life. Some of them have been short-term ones by design, some of them a little bit longer term, but I do have managerial experience. And secondly, every single former staffer that I've spoken with in the current circuit attorney's office has described Kim Gardner as a micromanager who does not delegate and who does not and likes to take on more duties herself than she can handle. Case in point is I was listening to a budget hearing from the Board of Aldermen, I think it was a few months ago, and you know, I sat in and watched it, and I couldn't believe that A, Kim Gardner showed up herself with no support for this budget hearing, and second, that she didn't even know how much money she was asking for. She didn't know what her expenditures were. And that's really the type of situation where, you know, you have people in your office that is their job to help you with that. And that is their job to be there with you for that and to know those numbers for you so that you don't get called out and embarrassed by the Board of Aldermen because you don't know answers to their questions, especially ones that you've got people on your staff that's their whole job to have the answers to those questions. And so I'm confident in my ability to delegate out work that is not necessarily the role or the exclusive job of the circuit attorney to those people that should be handling those matters or at least should be helping with those matters. If I were doing it differently, I would have the person in charge of my budget there with me for that meeting if I knew that I was going to be fielding questions from the Board of Aldermen about the budget, because it's just simply too big of a job to be handling those minutiae of the details yourself.
Realistically speaking, you're a Republican running in a overwhelmingly Democratic city. What's your path to victory based on just the reality of the city's politics?
Now, I'm not going to share my numbers too much with you, but I do believe that I've ran the numbers, and I do believe that there is a path to victory here. It's going to necessarily involve two things, though. First, getting out the message to as wide of a group as possible on the south side and the central corridor that I am running and that I am a viable candidate. There are just too many people who are upset with Kim and her lack of running the office well. You know, I don't have to talk about policies here when I can just rely upon her sheer managerial mismanagement. We've got over 100% turnover rate. We've got an abysmal conviction rate. No matter what she says, it's still around 50% for trials. And so getting that message out there. And then furthermore, I think that several candidates in the past have made tremendous mistakes in not showing their face and not campaigning on the north side. And so that's where I'm spending the vast majority of my time personally, getting to know the voters out there, getting to hear what things are a biggest concern to them, and letting them know that there is an alternative option to the Democrats. You know, we've had Democrats, it's been, I believe, over 40 years since the last Republican circuit attorney, and communities all throughout St. Louis are less safe because of it. and that's especially true in communities on the north side over the past 40 years. And I think that I can do a better job of helping our communities all over the city. And so that's my path to victory. Just getting the message out and trying to let people be aware of really what's affecting their communities.
For all of our stories, you can go to stlpublicradio.org. I'm on Twitter at rlittman. Daniel, where can people find you? Twitter, Facebook, anywhere else on the World Wide Web?
Well, my website's www.danielzprosecutor.com. I can be reached out by email at daniel@danielzprosecutor.com or follow me on Facebook at Daniel Zdrowski.
Until next time, so long.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.